So we've already heard the story of the Exodus. At the very beginning of the service today, we heard that scripture reading. This is a story that is epic, isn't it? It's a story that's one of the great tales in ancient history. It's a story of good versus evil and good wins. Yay! There's the evil Pharaoh who doesn't even have a name in the story. He's just referred to as Pharaoh. That shows how evil and how much we are allowed to hate him. Then there's the hero, Moses, who has a name. He's flawed, but in only the best kind of ways. Now, earlier in the story, if you read in Exodus 2, you read the story about how Moses came across a man who was beating one of the slaves. Moses looked around, saw no one was looking, and so killed the man who was beating the slave, which is a flaw. But we can allow it because he was a horrible oppressor and he was fighting for the right. And so we still kind of, we root for Moses, we root for the Israelites. Again, all parts of a great story, of an epic story. Pharaoh has all the power. Moses and the Israelites, they're the underdogs. They don't have any of the power. There's magic in the story, which is always a fun little twist about it as well. It's really no wonder that there are all sorts of songs and movies telling the story of the Exodus. Many of them tell it badly, but regardless. And so if you happen to follow because I've been sharing songs this whole fall, if you happen to follow the Walmer Facebook page, you may have already seen this, but I'm just going to, just a little clip of this song to give you a hint of a song.
When Israel was in Egypt land,
let my people go.
Oppressed so hard they could not stand.
Let my people go.
So the Lord said.
Everybody should have some Louis Armstrong. Just always there to play. Great song. Look it up. Play the whole thing. This is a new thing that I didn't know. Did you know the whole story of the Exodus was told as a musical? How fantastic is this? And see if you recognize Moses. This is just a really short YouTube clip if Wei Wei is able to show it, but it was a musical, so.
Moses, is it you? Is it true that you've returned? Deep in my heart, I knew one day you'd come home. Take a look around at this kingdom we will share. What's the matter, brother? Why do you stare? How can you build your kingdom on the blood of generations when all those who've suffered are the stones of its foundation? The river's overflowing with the flood of human tears. Still you keep them shackled in the bondage of their fear. It's no man's right to enslave another man, to make him a possession, chain his heart, chain his hands. It's not your right to kill anyone's dreams.
You have to look it up yourself. But it did get me thinking, when Dennis is done with his tour, what do you say Walmer puts on a musical? I don't know if we have enough people, and I don't know that we have anybody up to Val Kilmer's standard, but who knew that Val Kilmer played Moses? I didn't. Anyways, all that just to say, like, this is one of those epic stories. It's a story that is pretty much known through the Western world. It's the key story of Judaism. It's a key story of Christianity. It's the story of God showing and proving that he is above and beyond all the other gods of all the other empires and countries at the time. And yet, is that all that this story is? And that's, I think, the thing. We're so familiar. I'm guessing that most of us in this room are probably familiar with at least the basics of this story. We know that we know the story of the baby who was born. The Pharaoh had made a ruling that all the babies, 2 and under, were supposed to not be allowed to live. Couple of midwives said, oh, we don't like that rule. So they saved Moses. They put him in a basket and floated him down the Nile. And Pharaoh's own daughter found him and rescued him. He grew up in the palace. Then he was out one day, as we referenced earlier. He killed a guy, so he ran off. He spent some time living as a shepherd in the desert before he encountered God in the shape of a burning bush that was burning and it was not consumed. And God said, go back. I want you to confront Pharaoh. It's time for my people to be free. My people who've been living in Egypt for like 400 years and are oppressed in Egypt. So Moses goes back. He goes to Pharaoh. He says, let my people go. That's what God says. And Pharaoh says no. And so then this happens over and over and over again. And there are increasingly bad plagues that are showered upon Egypt. So it starts with just show what God's capable of, right? You throw down your stick, it becomes a snake. Actually, it's fun, the word that gets used is actually it becomes a sea dragon. So not even just like a gardener snake, it becomes like a sea dragon. But Pharaoh has magicians and they're able to do the same thing with theirs. God is more powerful. Moses, well, it's his brother Aaron, his sea dragon eats up the other sea dragon just to prove it. They turn the Nile River, where everybody gets all their water from, turns to blood. There's another plague where everything is inundated by frogs. There's also gnats and locusts and lots of fun. Lots of fun. There's a whole lot of plagues. You can read the whole story. It covers from about Exodus 7 through till Exodus 15 is kind of the story of all of this. Eventually, the last thing that happens is God sends the angel of death. And the angel of death kills the firstborn of every Egyptian. Not just the Egyptian people, but all the Egyptian livestock. Every firstborn dies. The people of Israel are safe because God says to them, on this night, I want you to slaughter a lamb. And then I want you to take the blood of the lamb and I want you to put it on the doorposts of your house. And then when the angel of death sees that blood, will pass right by, will pass over your house. And from that day on, the Israelites have celebrated, the Jewish people have celebrated the Passover to remember that God passed over their homes. Pharaoh losing his son was the end. He calls Moses and he says, go, your people can go. Get out of here. Take your livestock, take all your possessions, take whatever you want. Just get out of here because we are cursed because of you. And so the people of Israel, this nation that's not really a nation yet, they leave. Pharaoh changes his mind. He says, oh, what am I going to do? That was my entire workforce. Pyramids and all these other great big statues and things, all the wonders of Egypt. What are we going to do without this slave force to build the to make the bricks and build all of these things for us? So he gets his army and they get into their chariots and they chase after this kind of motley crew of ex-slaves who probably still have a slave mentality. The slaves find themselves with the sea behind them and the army ahead of them, but God is leading them. God is this fire, and he stands between the people of Israel and the enemy. And at the same time, parts the water behind them. And so the people of Israel walk through to the other side on dry land. The fire goes out. The army chases them right through the path in the middle of the water. And what happens? God lets go. And the water cascades in. And Pharaoh's entire army is drowned to death. And we want to cheer and go, way to go, God. You are bigger. You are more powerful. You are the warrior God. You are on the side of the oppressed and of the slaves. The underdog wins. This is fantastic. We love this story. Our God is bigger than your God. Our God is more powerful than your God. Our God, is King of kings, Lord of lords, Pharaoh of pharaohs. Our God is everything. Oh, it's such a good story. I was reading a book this week by a woman named Danielle Strickland. I had the opportunity a few weeks ago to hear her speak and really appreciated just her presence, what she had to say. And she wrote this book called The Ultimate Exodus. And she wrote this in this book. What if we aren't the Israelites? What if we are the Egyptians? I already don't like this story. How would we interpret this story if we weren't the underdog crying out to God, but we were the arrogant oppressors confronted with the God of the oppressed? Oh, the whole story of the Exodus suddenly isn't so much fun. She writes this, as much as I want to identify with the Israelites, it would be its own subtle form of denial to suggest that's the only way the Exodus story applies. The truth is much different. Right now, our entire Western economy thrives still at the expense of the poorest of the poor. Women and children in India and Bangladesh, far removed from our view, toil in cotton fields, often unpaid as slaves, so I can buy a t-shirt for $5. That purchase saves me enough cash to buy a cheap coffee picked by farmers in Ethiopia and Papua New Guinea, who were ripped off by someone whose name and company I don't know and don't care to know, because what I care about more than people who can't afford to feed their family is that I can have a chocolate donut with my coffee. And don't even get me started about the cocoa that made that donut, picked by children enslaved on cocoa plantations on the Ivory Coast of Africa. Most of those child slaves have been trafficked from Mali because they are extremely poor and vulnerable to the worst forms of oppression. But who really cares? Because nothing goes better together than chocolate and coffee. So slavery is stitched into my clothes and cooked into my food and drink. And I forgot to mention it on the brochure of my hard-hearted life. You can't hide from truth. You can't just pretend it didn't happen or isn't important or has nothing to do with you. Well, you can for a while if you want to be Pharaoh. Take a moment to be in the head and the heart of the most powerful person on the planet, a person who has accumulated wealth and power by exploiting people. One day, a shepherd marches in, and in a prophetic announcement says, God is on the side of the oppressed. It's time to let them go. Are you shocked? Amused? Bewildered? Do you respond with an immediate acknowledgement of guilt and shame? Do you apologize? No. You dig in. You prepare to fight for your right to your kingdom that you built. You protect your wealth and your spoils. You come up with righteous indignation at the sheer thankless audacity of a slave to confront your leadership. You slip into denial and defense, which is another way of saying you harden your heart, because the truth will be painful and shameful and hard. Suddenly, the story of the Exodus isn't so great, is it? Suddenly, I don't want to watch a musical telling the story. Suddenly, I don't want to hear Louis Armstrong sing with his great jazz accompaniment. And yet the reality is, I do care about the abused and the oppressed in our society. And I think it's a safe statement for me to say that probably most of us in this room care about the oppressed. My best guess would be that every single person here cares about kids who are forced to work on cocoa plantations somewhere across the other side of the world. My best guess is that we care about coffee farmers getting fair prices for the coffee that they grow. The coffee we serve on Sundays is fair trade coffee. It's intended to not oppress. The tea that we serve is fair trade tea. It's intended to not oppress. We still have to work on our sugar and those products, but we're getting there. When I buy coffee, when many of you buy coffee, those things matter. We care about where our clothes are made. But let's be honest, have you ever tried to follow where, like a piece of clothing that you buy, where it was made and how it was made and who it was made by? It's almost impossible. It's not that I don't care that there are people being trafficked. It's not that I don't care that there are people enslaved to giant global corporations. That's not it. I'm not like Pharaoh. It's not like I don't care about those. It's not like my heart is hardened because I would rather my comforts than those people be free. No, that's not true. That's not true about me. That's not true about you. I want to say to Danielle, wait a second. Stop it. That's not true. But the reality is, I don't know where my clothes were made. I can look at the label and it says made in China or made in Indonesia, but I don't know who made them. I don't know who picked the cotton that goes into them. How, as a person who lives in this part of the world, as a person who really does have more in like with the Egyptians than with the Israelites. And I think most of us are in that position. Living in this part of the world means that we are part of the empire. We aren't part of the slaves. How do we fight? How do we stop being the oppressor when we can't even figure out where our own clothes were made? How do we do this? And I think that question causes us to be paralyzed sometimes because it's too big. We're asking the question, how do we fix the world? I don't have the figure in front of me in it, so I don't want to get it wrong, but millions and millions and millions of slaves in the world today, all over the world. Some people who have been in slavery for generations. So it happens like this. Person A goes to person B for a loan, $50. Person B says, sure, I'll give you $50, but the interest is going to be way up here. You can work off your debt. Only the longer it takes, the more the interest climbs. You never work off your debt. You also don't have any power yourself to claim when your debt is paid. You're completely at the mercy of the person who made the loan. And so you die, and your child inherits your debt. And their child inherits the debt. And what do you have? Generations of slaves. Today, in 2019. And I think every one of us in this room wants to fight that. Every one of us in this room wants to do something against that. But how on earth do we? We're just regular people. How do we fight that? I think the key is in the story of the Exodus. And I think it's in the story of Moses. See, before Moses could fight anything, Moses had to deal with himself. Moses grew up. Sure, he was a son of Israel, but he grew up in the palace. He grew up a prince. He had a temper, clearly. We don't know really what inspired him to murder the guy. We like to think that it was because he was outraged at the morality of what was going on. Who knows if his motives were as pure as we like to think. And then he went out into the wilderness and he became a shepherd, one of the most frowned upon professions. It's a smelly profession. It's not a hugely lucrative profession. And yet, it's exactly the profession that the people of Israel had way back in the beginning when they first took up residence in Egypt. They were nomads. They were shepherds. They were given the best land in Egypt for being shepherds. At some point in their time there, they stopped being shepherds and they became bricklayers, probably because being a bricklayer in an empire like Egypt, known for all its building programs, was way more lucrative. Moses leaves, he becomes a shepherd again. He becomes a nothing. He's alone. He's not a prince. He has to lose all that stuff about himself. And then he finds himself face to face with this bush in the middle of the desert that's burning, out of which comes God's voice. And Moses knows that this is God, a God he maybe doesn't really understand. And he goes and God says, you're on holy ground. Take off your shoes. I have a mission for you. Moses has been shaped in the desert. He's been cleansed. He's had to deal with his own ego. He's had to deal with his own sense of who he is until he can hear God's voice. And then he can go back to Pharaoh, not going, I'm coming to reclaim my throne as a prince of Egypt. He's coming back as that shepherd to speak for God, to be humiliated. I mean, imagine, there he goes. I can't imagine. Try and imagine this. You go, God has said, I'm going to show you this really great trick. It's going to convince everybody that you're from me. You're going to throw this staff, or he always got Aaron to do it. Aaron was his brother. He's going to throw his staff on the ground, and I'm going to turn it into a sea dragon, this creature of the deep. And you're like, this is awesome. Look at the power that I'm going to show. They'll have no doubt but that God sent me and that our God is bigger than their God and they'll have to do what I say. And there's Moses and the sea dragon appears. And what happens? Magicians show up and they turn their staffs into more sea dragons. Can you imagine what that does to the ego of Moses? See, God was still working in him. I don't think the plagues, I don't think all of that journey was just about the Egyptians. I don't think it was all just about them. I think God was doing something in Moses. Because see, the same thing happened. The next thing that happened was Moses went down to the Nile and tapped it with the staff, and all of a sudden the Nile turns completely to blood, and there's just blood, all the water's blood everywhere. Really a grosser miracle than when Jesus turned water into wine. I like Jesus way better, but can you imagine if Moses turned the entire Nile into wine? Would have been a very different story. But here's the thing about turning the Nile into blood. Pharaoh's magicians, they did the same thing. They also were able to turn the water into blood. Moses has got to be sitting there thinking, okay, like, if you're so great, God, if you're better than their God, how come their magicians can do the same things you can do? His ego had to have taken a hit. He had to be sitting there going, what is going on here? I think God was growing some humility in Moses. I think God was saying to Moses, are you still going to follow me? Will you do the next thing? When I send you the next time, will you go? Will you keep fighting this battle? Will you finally believe that it's me doing the work, not you? See, eventually, for the Israelites to be shaped into God's people, to be a light to all the nations, it had to be God who did it, not them who did it. I think Pharaoh also needed God to work in him. Now, Pharaoh didn't want God to work in him. I think we need God to work in us. I think the answer to all the evils in the world is not that we can step out and be magnificent and change the world and do all of these great things. Some of us are called to do great and amazing, extraordinary things on the world stage. The problems feel too big, I think, for most of us. And so I think what God calls us to is to change in us first. God says, you know what the root of all that's wrong with the world is? It's in each of us. And so I can sit there and I can argue with Danielle Strickland and I can say, hey, Danielle, I care about where my coffee comes from. I care about oppressed kids and women. I care about generations of slavery. I care about all the evils of the world. I don't want to be the oppressor. I don't want to be Pharaoh. And I think God responds to me and he says, Elaine, then get your right heart right. Elaine, then own up to all of the ways that you benefit from being part of the empire. Some that are so subtle. Elaine, own up to all of the things inside of yourself that you aren't actually willing to give up. Right? I can go, we're serving fair trade coffee. That's the coffee that I buy. Until the place that sells it isn't open and I really need a coffee first thing in the morning and the only place I can go is Tim Hortons, which doesn't sell fair trade coffee. Well, then that's on the store for not being open when I need my coffee. The whole story of the Exodus is a story of freedom from slavery. But it's not just a story from slavery as we think of it from the American South or from the slavery going on around our world right now. We are enslaved to sin. And it shows itself in so many different ways in the world. It shows itself in literal slavery. It shows itself in our addictions. It shows itself in our grasping for more and more and more stuff. It shows itself in the absurd, unrealistic hours that we work so that we can get more and more stuff, so that we can keep up our standard of living, so that we can do all of the things that we want to do, so that we can have all the benefits of all the things that we want in this world. It shows up in subtle ways and obvious ways. And I think the story of the Exodus challenges us to deal with our own sin, to deal with our own oppression. How am I, Elaine, enslaved to sin? How are you enslaved to sin? What is oppressing you? What addiction, what value, what time sucker in your life is oppressing you so that you can't know the full freedom that God has to offer? And that's where the story of the Exodus parallels the story of Jesus. Jesus who came and died on a cross so that we could be free from sin. So that we could go to God directly and say, God, change me, root it out of me, fix me, cleanse me, purify me, take the sin, take the addictions, take whatever it is that it is oppressing me and deal with it the same way as you dealt with Pharaoh and the Egyptians. When we can put ourselves in Pharaoh's shoes, then we can start to realize that it's uncomfortable, to say the least, to allow God to deal with our own internal struggles, our own internal oppression. It's hard. It takes humility. It takes dedication. It takes commitment. It takes a willingness to give up some things, to let go of things that are important to us, that give us value. God gave up his son. Jesus gave up his life. And he says to us, come and follow me. Take up your own cross. In other words, give up whatever you have to give up. And then he says, and I'm not going to leave you alone to do it, but I send my Holy Spirit to do the work in you. This is such good news. See, the people of Israel couldn't free themselves. Moses had no power of his own. God showed up. God did wonders. God did miracles. God rescued the people. The same way God shows up and God rescues us. In a few minutes, we're going to come to the communion table together. This is something that's a rite, a ritual, if you will, that we Christians participate in. We're remembering that on the night when Jesus was betrayed, on the night before Jesus died, that he took bread and he took wine off the table and he declared them to be representative of his own death, of his body, his broken body, of his blood that would be spilled out, recognizing that through Christ's death is the way that we have freedom, that through Christ's death is the way that we have life, that we have hope, that the oppressor is defeated. It's not just a Pharaoh. It's death itself. It's sin itself that is defeated through Jesus. I think the story of the Exodus invites us to take a good hard look at ourselves, but doesn't leave us stuck going, oh my goodness, I'm horrible. What hope is there? It invites us to remember that God saves. See, because I don't think God just saved the Israelites. I think there were Egyptians that God saved too. We just don't have their stories because the Hebrew Bible is about the Hebrew people, not about the Egyptian people. But we know from Jesus that God's offer to save is for everybody.